Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
Well, continuing in our study in Romans chapter 9, we find that Paul is dealing with the doctrine of election, God's sovereignty and salvation, and he's dealing with the questions that arise, and somebody has to deal with these questions, and Paul, led by the Spirit of God, is doing that, and somebody has to be willing to teach what Paul has written, and that's what I'm trying to do by God's help and grace at this time. And we've come to verse 22, where we learn something of God's purpose for what are called here the vessels of wrath. And this gets into deep waters, but I think it's very vital to the proper understanding of this whole subject. And what we have to understand in all of this is that salvation is planned and executed in such a way that differing aspects of God's multifaceted and glorious character are displayed. And as I said on the broadcast Friday, we delight in highlighting God's mercy and love and grace, which is displayed in the vessels of mercy. We are understandably less eager to talk about God's holiness, God's wrath, God's hatred for sin, God's justice, which must be poured out upon sin and upon the sinners who in unrepentant rebellion continue in their sin, spurning the overtures of God's mercy. And on those, the character of God, the other side of the character of God, you might say, or other facets, other aspects of the character of God are displayed, namely His holiness, His justice, when He judges them in a way that is appropriate for the crimes which they have committed. And that is just as important to display who God is. If you only display the love, the mercy, the grace of God, then you have a lopsided portrait of who He is. You don't really know God, do you? Until you also are willing to deal with His righteousness, His holiness, His just judgment against sin, His holy wrath against sin. And all of these things are part of who God is, and we need to know who God is. And God displays Himself in various ways, and God is going to display His righteous wrath upon those vessels of wrath who are going to destruction. And that's what we read about in Romans 9:22. What if God, wanting to show His wrath and to make His power known, the power to punish, to make His power known, endured with much long-suffering the vessels of wrath prepared for destruction? In other words, He demonstrated and continues to demonstrate amazing long-suffering even to them, because sinners are not destroyed immediately. You would think they would be, particularly when they commit some especially heinous offense against God. I remember reading about the famous agnostic, atheist, whatever he called himself, of about 100 years or so ago now, I think, by the name of Robert Ingersoll, who used to make a pretty good living by going around, probably more than 100 years ago now, to various towns and holding meetings in which he gave the reasons why he was an atheist, but he did it in a pretty colorful way, and he would actually, I understand, stand on stage and say, if there is a God, I defy him to strike me dead in the next 60 seconds or some such time frame, maybe 3 minutes, I forget how long, maybe five, but it was a what would normally to us seem like a short time. Then he would stand there on stage with his stopwatch, and the audience of basically God-fearing people would wait in suspense, expecting him to be struck dead. And the seconds would tick off, and nothing would happen, and then he would laugh and say, that proves there is no God. Does it? What if God, wanting to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long-suffering the vessels of wrath prepared for destruction? If I understand the scriptures and I understand the condition of Robert Ingersoll, I would suspect that he is probably a vessel of wrath prepared for destruction, and God showed him long-suffering to an amazing degree. But eventually his time came. Similar to that story that I've heard and perhaps have told a time or two myself about the two farmers who lived side by side. One was a God-fearing man and went to church, and the other was an atheist who cultivated his crops and worked his farm 7 days a week, didn't bother to go to church. And he would taunt the other farmer. He would say, all this time you've worked your farm 6 days and gone to church on the Lord's Day, refused to work on the Lord's Day and honored God, and I've been working 7 days, and look, the crops are in, and I've got a better crop than you do. How do you explain that? And the wise, God-fearing farmer just simply said, God doesn't settle all of his debts in September. What if God, wanting to show his wrath and make his power known, endured with much long-suffering the vessels of wrath prepared for destruction? Seems to me like we're getting a new wave of bold and antagonistic atheism in our age right now, with the Da Vinci Code and other things, the latest findings supposedly about Judas Iscariot not being a traitor, and all kinds of things that are being propagated now, seemingly with delight in the part of the people who are doing it, and with great help from the national media, as ways of taunting Christianity and Christians, and of course, ultimately, God himself. That's what's behind it all. A disdain for Jesus Christ and for Christians and for the God of the Bible. I even heard a snatch of something on the radio the other day that I wish I'd heard a little bit more of, but there was a reference to Judas, this new finding supposedly, that Judas really wasn't a traitor after all. He was a loyal disciple. And then in the same report, which was on National Public Radio, it said something about Christ's miracle of walking on the water actually took place during a cold snap, and he was walking on ice. And I thought, now these folks have really showed their stupidity. Because, according to the account of the Bible, the disciples were out on the sea in the middle of a boat. And if there was a cold snap and Jesus was walking on ice, then they all would have been iced in the boat. That makes no sense whatsoever. Furthermore, it was a storm. The waves were rolling high, and the disciples were afraid for their lives. And Christ came to them walking on the water and then calmed the storm. So it doesn't even make sense. If you're going to say that, it makes more sense to deny the miracle ever happened, to say the whole thing was just made up, it was a story, than to come up with something like Jesus walking on ice. I mean, come on now. Why, if you're not going to accept the basic details of the historic account, that the disciples were out on the boat and it was a storm and Jesus came to them walking on water, if you're not going to accept that, and why even bother to propound something so foolish as to say that the Lake of Galilee froze over and Jesus walked on ice? You know, I'm not an expert on the Lake of Galilee, but I'm not aware that it's ever frozen over. Maybe it has, but I'm of the opinion that that doesn't happen. But even if it did, obviously the account just won't allow for that interpretation. That's foolish. That's about as silly as the explanation I once heard for Christ feeding the multitude, the 5,000, with the bread and the fishes, and he didn't really multiply the bread and the fishes, but he had this food stored in a cave, and the disciples were passing it out of the cave and to him, and it looked like he was multiplying them. And I think, can you imagine how much work and preparation and purchasing of food and preparation of food and all that would be necessary to have an operation like that, to have that kind of food stored in a cave? I mean, anybody who's done any food preparation knows that to feed 5,000 men plus women and children, say probably a minimum of 15,000 people, but even if you use a smaller figure of 5,000, can you imagine all the preparation and organization and what would be required to have that much food for 5,000 people? That's more preposterous than the miracle itself. Why even bother to come up with things like this? Why not just say, I don't believe the Bible. I don't believe it ever happened. I believe it's a lie. And be honest about it, instead of trying to come up with these preposterous explanations that are more unbelievable than the biblical account. But of course, you see, men and women, people have hostility against God, and when they do, they become virtually irrational. This kind of opposition is irrational. But the point is, you wonder, why doesn't God strike people like that dead right now? Right and left. Bang, bang. Prove he's God and strike some fear into the hearts of people when they see that happening to blasphemers of such an enormous level. Well, I don't know because I'm not God, but I do get a clue when I read things like this in the Bible. And this is not the only place that talks about God's incredible long-suffering. What if God, wanting to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long-suffering the vessels of wrath prepared for destruction? That's what he's doing. He's long-suffering, but eventually he does execute justice and demonstrates that side of his nature. He is a God of justice. He is a God of holiness. He is a God of righteousness. He is a God who visits just punishment upon the evildoer. And that's a side of him that needs to be displayed, just like his mercy and love and grace need to be displayed. And Paul offers that as the explanation as to why there are vessels of wrath, just like there are also vessels of mercy. God desires to demonstrate some things. He's displaying his character. He's showing the universe who he is. And the details of all of this and exactly how that demonstration is going to be broadcast and what it's going to accomplish, I can't tell you. They're just these few hints in the Bible. But that does help explain some things. And I think helps to put it all into perspective and focus and to realize that God has a plan. It is a magnificent plan. And he's carrying out that plan. And he has a purpose for the elect. He has a purpose for the non-elect. And all will ultimately serve God's purposes. He is a powerful God, a mighty God, a wise God, a glorious God. And his attributes will be displayed to all the universe. Until tomorrow, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you his eternal peace.